podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner, organizing Denise. Happy New Year!
Happy New Year!
Is it happy though? Are you happy? I mean, it was like, wow. I couldn't even reach
that's
you.
Quick.
I couldn't even reach you. People trying to have conversations, Merry Christmases and Happy New Year's. And somebody was like, I'm on the slopes. Have no time for you. Thank you. That's what you did to me. That's what
you did.
Girl
was on the slopes. And I was also trying to reach you because they had the Wi-Fi on the slopes now. Mm. I was trying to reach you. We called several times from frigid conditions.
Once. You called once.
We was into that Kinder Punch and falling down. And taking our ski and snowboarding lessons. We had a great time.
I'm glad you did. The new year is off to an interesting start, I'd say. With the big news that everybody was excited about. Now, okay, let me not throw shade. Let me just say what happened. So Essence is officially Black-owned again. Essence Ventures, an independent African-American-owned company founded last year by Sundial Brands founder Richelieu Dennis, has decided to take up the call that Time Inc. put out to buy Essence Communications, which is, of course, responsible for Essence Magazine, along with all of the Essence events and festivals that we have come to know and love through Girls Trip.
Not Jazz Fest. Okay, that's real dope.
So Essence was Black owned until 2005 when Time Inc. bought it.
Why'd they play hot potato with it? What happened?
Well, I think Time in 2005 was feeling itself, but it's been losing ever since. Print publications are losing in market size, and Time put a lot of things up on the market last year and then denied a request that I think it was Meredith Corps was trying to buy it for quite a large sum of money, and Time turned down that $2.8 billion bid.
Oh, wow.
Essence has been bought for an undisclosed amount of money, and it felt like all Black publications were like, yes, Essence is Black owned again. But what is really going to change?
What does that even mean, though, if it's Black owned? I mean, because, you know, Black people could do all kinds of shady stuff.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'm excited. I'm excited that, you know, Dennis has bought this. But I don't know. Like, Essence target market has always been Black women. The president is a Black woman. She's not losing her job. What will change?
I really don't know what will change. I mean, it really depends on the politics of the person who bought it. And I don't know their politics. My understanding is that if they got that much money, they're probably a really good business person. And they're going to want to make good business out of it. When good business and good politics don't necessarily mix, right? We know that.
We know that.
So it'll be interesting to see, okay, what does the future of Essence look like in the most marketable way, at least in the vision of this person?
Sure. I mean, I'm convinced Essence is going to do really well this year simply because of the success of Girls Trip. I wouldn't be surprised if Essence Festival like sells out in New Orleans and in Durban. Because
oh, yeah, just because they had like a 2-hour advertisement that sold out in theaters.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going. So.
Are you really? Or are you playing with me right now?
I really want to.
I want to as well, but I don't think I'm going to make it. I'd like to go, though. I've never gone. I love the state.
I'm a crowdfund for my trip. Get to me over to Essence Festival. You can do it, people.
I was actually trying to find a way for us to get accreditation, but, you know, Black-owned businesses don't have that information out early. So I haven't been.
Shay. Hello. Shay.
Honesty. In other news that broke on January 1st, the first day of the year, Time's Up Now says 300 women who work in film, television, and theater. After Me Too and Yes You and You Too and all of the hashtags, these women have decided to come together. And not only are they putting money where their mouth is, they are joining forces with other women from other industries. So Time's Up Now, which has over 300 signatories at this time, is a way for women from Hollywood, basically, who work in some form in Hollywood, to support women in all industries who are faced with sexual harassment in the workplace. They've put together a legal fund.
Mm.
Now, see, that's important. That will subsidize women who seek legal advice due to discrimination at the workplace. So they're working with the National Women's Law Center, which is very well-renowned, older, nonprofit organization that provides legal assistance for gender equity. They're also working with Better Brave, and they also point to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. So they're not only looking to support women who may be deciding to take on legal proceedings, but also people who feel like they can't do anything else. They're also looking to influence policy reform and so on and so forth. What do you think?
I'm initially very optimistic. As you know, the farmworking women put out a letter in support of Me Too and talked about, you know, this is not just happening in Hollywood. This is happening.
That's not how they said it. They said, dear sisters.
They did say, dear sisters.
We write on behalf of the approximately 700,000 women
who work
in the agricultural fields and packing sheds across the United States.
Okay, cool. They was very diplomatic. And so one of the first tasks was that they wrote a letter back to that organization saying, you know, thank you for your solidarity, et cetera, et cetera. And we try to give you solidarity back. But when you have organizational movements, sometimes they peter out. I feel like I'm the pessimist today. I don't know. But I mean, like, where is Now in all of this? You remember Now?
Who?
Right. Exactly who? The National Organization of Women. Remember them? Yeah. This should be their big and shining moment. This whole Me Too movement, everything that has come up, even leading up to the last presidential election with Hillary on the ballot. And yet and still, they have been silent on so many things, from Planned Parenthood to sexual harassment to whatever. When I say silent, sure, they have like a policy paper and everything, but they're just not out there raising hell the way that you would hope that an organization with that level of resources would be doing. So it'll be interesting to see what path strategically they choose to take. There are organizations already set up in Hollywood that were supposed to curb this. There's a union, right? There's the Screen Actors Guild. They're supposed to have some regulations in place that should have curbed this and that should have some level of consequences for the people that are doing this sexual harassment. But they don't, because money speaks in Hollywood. You can't get a film made, you can't get an ad made, you can't get anything made if you don't have the money. And so people that have a ton of resources or are connected to people with a ton of resources get a pass every single time. I really don't know how you can subvert that system or make that system work for you. The only thing keeping people with money in check right now is public relations.
Mm-hmm.
That's our state
and fair. And that's something that I brought up in one of the other podcasts, right? It wasn't that the fact that Weinstein did this, got him fired. It was the fact that it went public. Right, that there was a very long article on it. And one of the things that Time's Up Now is also focusing on is getting more women into the boardroom, because statistics show more women in management, more women in the boardroom actually correlates, not a causality, but correlates with less fear of sexual harassment, less reportings of sexual harassment in the workplace. So that is also something that they're looking to do, because they know exactly what you said. You know, it doesn't matter what the industry is. People say, if it's a good salesman, if it's a good consultant, if it's a good client account manager, that person is making money. We can't possibly get rid of him.
Yeah, I mean, there was even an article in the New York Times about where is the Me Too movement for Wall Street? Because sexual harassment is so rampant there, and studies have shown that, but no one comes forward with it.
And they won't. I'd be surprised if there were a Me Too for Wall Street, because so many heads would roll. So many heads would roll.
It would be a wrap.
It would be. You know, there were a lot of amazing things that came out on Netflix over really? The holidays.
Mm-hmm. Is one of them Bright?
Okay, so
I'm assuming one of them was not Bright.
We're not gonna talk too much about Bright today. Oh, wow. But they did announce that Bright is getting a sequel. They heard the call. Maybe we'll get a backstory. Yeah. Maybe we will get something.
A
more
black
real
woman in a scene? A black woman in a scene. Because no, a black woman does know. Not exist in this world. You got a sci-fi world. You got what? You got an elf. You got an alien policeman.
You got fairies getting killed.
You got all kinds of things. You got a magic sword. You got a magic, you know, you got a manic pixie chick, but not near a black woman.
Like, well, maybe she'll come in as Will's sister. Will Smith need a mama or a sister or somebody.
Oh my gosh, she'll come up with a copy. Can't you even get Madea in there?
Actually, I'm going to call you racist, because Will Smith's character had a daughter, and she's a black daughter. Even so, you, I'm calling okay. you on your colorism right now.
You calling me on that?
No, I have no idea. Bright was not Bright. It was not an intelligent script. It was
so much they could have done.
But you know what? Go to Black Girl Nerds and read their review of it. I think they had the best review of it. No,
shouted them out, because I just want to take a moment and say Black Girl Nerds has been just giving me life lately. I really appreciate them. So there you have it.
There you have it. No, we're not talking about Bright. We're going to talk about something I haven't actually watched yet. Actually, I did think about Mudbound, though, because Mary J. up here winning awards and things.
Mary J. did that. She definitely did that.
And I had to think about her this morning, because this is the first time that we're recording with video. And, you know, Mary J. says she didn't know how vain she was until she had to record without makeup. And I was like, we record kind of early in the morning. I might be feeling Mary J. Blige on those words of vanity. No, but I wanted to mention Dave Chappelle, because just briefly, because I don't really know what to think of him these days.
Come on, you know what to think of him.
Do I? Because I have mad appreciation for the Chappelle Show. Okay. And loved him. It's been a minute. Oh, but yeah. But he was, you know, he was very important to me at that time. And now it just seems like he's taking this slide into grumpy older man.
Oh, he the uncle now. He the uncle at the barbecue in the back talking shit. You know, I mean, like, that's who he is now. And it's cool. I saw the thing, and the most I could get out of it was a couple of chuckles. This is not the Dave Chappelle that I, like, was belly laughing on. But I also have to admit that at the time that we collectively were belly laughing about David Chappelle, our consciousness and politics were at a certain place. What was acceptable and who was acceptable to punch down to was also very different.
He wasn't doing a lot of punching down at the time.
Here's the thing, is that one of the things that David Chappelle said about
Dave Chappelle. Because you're talking about David LaChapelle, that's somebody else. So Dave Chappelle.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to get fancy tonight. But okay, Dave Chappelle. So Dave said when he left the Chappelle Show that one of the things that caused like a lot of cognitive dissonance for him was realizing who was laughing at him and who was laughing with him. Sure. And that became something that he could not reconcile. Right. He couldn't feel good about at the end of the day doing the show. I think when Dave did the show, it was just for himself, creating art kind of like for himself. And in that way, he's creating art for other Black people. Mm-hmm. But then when he became the Chappelle Show in the way that it became, it was huge. Mm-hmm. He realized, oh, majority of my audience is like white people with very little consciousness about race issues and who are racist themselves, that are laughing at my joke in a context that I did not intend. Mm-hmm. And the reality of that.
So that's not very specific hard, to him, right?
Not specific to that him, but I feel like he let go of that level of consciousness in order to go forward and make the kind of art that he's always made. I don't really think that comedians can be super conscious about who their audiences are and make authentic art, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So the only thing that makes their art in any way politically conscious is if they themselves are politically conscious. Because otherwise, you know, you can't, that's not really a dance you could fake. And Dave is basic.
He's always been basic. But the thing is, and I'm not defending, so for those of you who may not know, he has a Netflix special out called Equanimity. And in Equanimity, he responds to some of the critique that he received already from his previous Netflix special with some remarks that were classified as transphobic. So he responds to those trans critics by, for example, saying, quote, them niggas cut they dicks off, that's all the proof I need, end quote, saying that he takes trans people seriously. So my question is, though, like, this isn't new. So I'm wondering if what is new is the way we care or the way we're trying to hold comedians responsible, because comedians making rape jokes isn't new. Comedian making jokes about all types of marginalized people isn't new, right? So I get really offended because the R word is used often by comedians, or they make jokes about people and they're doing it in a way that seems like the person might have some type of physical or mental disability. There's not huge outrage about those types of jokes.
Yet. I think the consciousness is building. So that there might be in the future.
One of Richard the Pryor's happened... jokes back in the day were very race conscious and extremely violent and promoted. And he was known to be violent towards women. Mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering, like, why should, and I'm just, you know, I'm just putting it out there. Why should we care now what a comedian says? Like, why are we putting them on like this pedestal of political consciousness?
I think now we understand the importance of pop culture in a way that we didn't understand it in the past. Now we got basically a person whose only credentials are pop culture credentials as president of the United States. We understand that pop culture is way more influential, if not as influential, of changing public discourse, public mindset as policy, as mm-hmm. political policy, mm-hmm. right? So if you have a bunch of people that are seen as important or that people relate to that are celebrities that come out and talk about sexual harassment, you're going to have way more momentum on it than you do when you have a Supreme Court nominee being accused of it very legitimately, right, in his nomination process, as we had with Anita Hill. She wasn't a celebrity, right? And people didn't relate to her in that same way that they relate to celebrities. And there you have it. Now we have way more momentum on something. So people understand the importance of pop cultures, and comedians are pivotal in shaping what that pop culture looks like. And in David Chappelle's skit, and this is fresh on my mind because I just saw it last night. In the skit, I called it a skit. Look at me.
Stand up.
Stand up. His little itty bitty skit. in his stand-up, he has the essential conflict of identity politics, where he talks about saying something really demeaning to an interracial couple, having the woman petition against him to his promoter, saying that that they should not promote Dave Chappelle because he's doing this kind of stuff, especially in this climate. It seemed like it was a really well thought out letter. And the woman was Asian. And he was like, and she was talking about him being insensitive to interracial relationships. And he was like, see, this is what you don't get. How could I be insensitive to interracial relationship when I myself am in an interracial relationship with an Asian woman? And there you have it, folks. It's not enough to just be Black, to be politicized in a way that uplifts Black people. It's not enough to just have some level of identity or some affiliation to an identity in order to be politicized, to uplift other people. And we know this all the time. We know that this happens, that people can be in an identity and, you know, just be Judases to their own, be your own people, right? Like we know it's a meme at this point, it's your own people. So Dave feels like he gets a pass because I'm not in any way transphobic. This is one of his words, right? That's what he said. And then he could say anything that he wants that's transphobic, as long as we, you know, we value the purity of his heart. Well, the purity of his heart doesn't matter because his rhetoric matters. And his rhetoric has an effect. And he's not willing to come to terms to that effect. Last time he tried to come to terms to that effect, he went to Africa, went out the industry, and probably went a little bit mad. Right. Like, so now, like, his strategy is to distance himself from the effect that he has. That's my take on David Chappelle.
In our second segment, let's see. Because it is the new year, we should.
According to the white man's calendar.
Not the white man's, but according to one calendar, yes. We should perhaps pay tribute to some of the greats that we lost in 2017. And there were many, many who had been in the struggle well before we were on the scene, who had done so much, who would probably pass the Harry Belafonte test. There were so many who we lost. For example, Dick Gregory, Dennis Banks, most recently, of course, Erica Garner. And I want to talk about that one just briefly. There was a lot of uproar on Twitter before Erica even passed away. May she rest in peace. There was a lot of like back and forth. You know, some people who would identify as more radical were really frustrated that people were pointing to Erica Garner's work as an activist. Because they were saying she's more than, you know, her anti-racist activism. And I didn't understand what was happening because the accolades and accolades, like, that's not new. People always do that. Anytime someone is getting introduced on a stage or is perhaps very ill or passed away, people talk about what they did. Not saying it's right, but what's wrong with it when it comes to Erica Garner? Did you understand that conversation? Did you see that happening on Twitter?
I saw it happening on Twitter and I understood the conversation. And just to rehash for those that haven't been following what's been happening with the with Erica Garner on Twitter, she had made some homophobic comments on Twitter. And then when she was called on it, she doubled down on it. And so people are saying in the wake of her passing, can we just mourn her for a bit before we bring out all the stuff, so to speak, you know? And a lot of people on the other side are saying, wait a second, so when are we supposed to talk about it? Because we were talking about it when she was alive too. And I retweeted something that I thought was important to be said, which is that someone said, if someone negates my humanity, even if they're Black and share certain identities with me, I am not obligated to regard them, respect them, mourn them, however you want to put it, even if we share a particular struggle in one area, right? And this is something that that's a lot to unpack. Because queer people have always had to overlook a lot. queer Black people especially have always had to overlook a lot of bullshit in order to be part of Black struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So
lead Black struggle. Let's be clear.
Oh, man. And then to get sidelined in the history of said struggles, mm-hmm. right? So there's always been this level of erasure that we have experienced with regard to our Blackness. Even in Dave's toxic rhetoric in his stand-up, he talks about being trans and being Black. It's two distinct things, as if trans mm-hmm. Black people don't even exist. Mm-hmm. Right. So there isn't this understanding that, wait a second, but we here too, and trans Black people have some of the worst outcomes of all trans people. So what is you saying, really,
mm-hmm.
that we don't even exist? So there's this level of erasure that happens that sees Blackness as this heteronormative, heterosexual, cis thing, that condition that you can have. And so there's this definite feeling that there's this like duality happening. You know, I have a friend that really, you know, had a problem embracing his own Blackness, because that was where a lot of the homophobia that he experienced had come from, was from other Black people. Mm-hmm. And so he was just like, one of the ways that he was trying to protect himself was to distance himself.
Mm-hmm.
This is sad. And unless we understand that queer people are also Black people. Black mm-hmm. people can also be queer people.
Mm-hmm.
None of this was going to be resolved. And even in what Erica Gardner is criticized for is this separation. One of the things she's criticized for a few things that were homophobic or seen as homophobic. And
such
one of
as?
The things, she supported a politician that was openly homophobic because he was doing some BLM anti-police work, mm-hmm. And so decided that didn't disqualify him. His homophobia didn't disqualify him, and she doubled down on her support of him. So that was one.
Mm-hmm.
And one tweet that she made in response to the critique about this, she was talking about, oh, I guess the gays are going to be angry at me, as if Black people weren't also the gays. Trademark.
The gays.
You had the kids coming for you, and that's something else. You know, you got problems with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it, and one of the things that was happening in the wake of people trying to just get on, let's all get on the same page and just mourn someone who was down for the struggle kind of thing, is there's this infantilizing, I don't know how to speak words.
Okay. We're going to work with it. Uh-huh.
Right. Almost like, well, you know where Erica is coming from, and you can't expect her to be a fully formed, fully woke, blah, blah, blah individual.
Well, what's wrong with that argument, though? It's like she didn't choose to be an anti-racist activist, right? Her father sold Lucy's. He died on camera saying he was dying, right? With a chokehold, which is not allowed on the New York police force.
Definitely.
Right. And the people got off. Like, it was so obvious that even W said he couldn't understand how the police are acquitted. If W is talking about he don't understand how police got acquitted, then you know, like, there's something really, really wrong. Real bad. Right. And so she was put into the spotlight.
Okay.
She didn't fully rise to the occasion, but she was also, and I'm not saying it's an excuse, but she was also 27. She was new to the game. She was learning as she goes. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's the Cardi B defense. I understand what you're getting at, right? Like, it's
the Cardi B defense. I'm sure you're the Cardi B fan. I'm not a Cardi B fan. You're the Cardi B fan.
Hey, yeah, but it was the Cardi B defense when she was called on her transphobia, right? Like,
right.
It was like, but look at where Cardi's coming from, you know? And she's coming from Deep Bronx, mm-hmm. and, you know, all of a sudden...
But Cardi also corrected herself and apologized and learned.
And all of a sudden in the limelight, and you can't express it. But the thing is that, here's what's wrong with that response,
mm-hmm.
is if I say to you, if I call you Lucy, and you like, whoa, but Lucy's not my name, could you not call me Lucy? oh, so now you're getting sadiddy with me. I can't just call you Lucy because I want to call you Lucy. Like, basic respect is not a class thing.
No.
There's all manner of poor people, people from urban situations, absolutely, people that are uneducated, that understand that,
oh, I didn't say she didn't understand because of her class. I said she was put into the spotlight. She was rising to the occasion of her situation. She was learning as she goes. She was homophobic. Was she, I believe so.
We don't know.
There was growth. I don't know about the homophobia. I'm just saying there was growth in her interviews when she was talking about things. You could see that she would learn from interview to interview. She would learn more about what it means to be an anti-racist activist.
Oh, sure.
She might, probably didn't have, I mean, look, who was at the hospital? Who was with family? Al Sharpton. Is Al Sharpton teaching her something about homophobia?
Probably not.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying I did see growth from interview to interview, but she wasn't surrounding herself with queer activists.
Obviously not, and keep the hope alive. But I think as queer people, we're kind of sick of keeping the hope alive, right?
Like,
we're kind of sick.
But we
we're kind of sick of waiting for our turn at humanity.
But there were some people who were speaking up for her, like Charlene Carruthers.
Yeah, and Jamel, horrible last night. I be saying first names like I know people.
I'm not saying it was right, and I'm not defending homophobia. But again, how can we hold people to like get everything right? I appreciate the conversation, and the conversation is important, but life is life, right? Like okay, look, there are a lot of issues that she represents. She represents the dismal situation for Black women mothers in the United States. They have higher instances of miscarriages. They have higher instances of premature birth. They have higher instances of dying during childbirth. She was at a hospital when she passed away that everybody was like, I'm surprised that hospital's even still open.
Girl, I feel all of that.
There were a lot of things that we could have been talking about while also having the conversation that she was homophobic.
And you know how we could have done that?
How?
If people could have just said, yep. And then there was her homophobia, which is well documented. But people weren't ready to say that.
Okay.
And that was the problem. And that's why all those other conversations somewhat got stymied. Because if you cannot tell the whole truth about someone, fuck your truth. And that's what ends up happening. People want to have these polished, sort of brandable ideas about people immediately after death, immediately after they do some fuck shit. And it's a problem because for the people that they've erased and marginalized and talked down to, we're just not here for it anymore. Mm-hmm. There was a time when we didn't have a voice and now we have a voice and we're just like, nah.
Well, then we have other people who are great and, in my opinion, extremely underrated.
Who?
Robert Guillaume. Also known as Robert Williams.
Benson,
yes. A lot of people hate on Benson. Look, I grew up watching Benson. Benson was my man. I love me some Benson.
Benson perfected Shay.
Benson was dope. He died last year at the age of 89. May he rest in peace. But this man was a great. And what Ava... Look, I'm ready for the day, Ava. Any day now, please.
You know what? You're going to need to stop being to keep working on this one. I'm going to need you.
I can't help it.
Fill it back.
I can't help it. But what did Ava DuVernay put in her tweet giving him props? She said, also, let's remember that Robert Guillaume was among the first celebs to appear at AIDS fundraisers. Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Who talks about that? He was the first Black lead of Phantom of the Opera. He was on the stage. He was on the screen. He was on TV. He was doing all the things. He was on all our favorite shows. He made appearances on Good Times, on The Jeffersons. He got his spinoff from Soap, won 2 Emmy Awards, one of which he was the first to win as a Black man. And no one won it again until Donald Glover won it last year. He's a great. No one talks about him. No one talks about the work he does. That's all I'm saying. I feel like we have a lot of people that we could be like uplifting, but we spend so much time like worried about people who aren't doing things that we feel strongly about. There are people doing them.
Oh, sure. I hear you on that. I think that they're definitely I can't remember where I read it, but it was one person's New Year resolution. They had a list of resolutions. It was a luck. Where it said, remember to sometimes resist the urge to critique because you should also create instead of just destroying, right?
Okay. So that's growth. Hashtag growth.
Okay, so I hear that because I think that we live in a culture right now that definitely has a pylon effect. It's deep. You know, if someone will point something out and there's a lot of people just being like, yup, that's messed up. And I think there's some Twitter accounts that you don't even see them posting anything about their lives. You don't see them posting anything about they like, or I saw a movie and it was dope and here's why it was dope. Whatever, just whatever. The only thing they post is this is messed up for this reason and this is messed up for that reason and this is messed up for this reason. Now I get that. A lot of things are messed up, but we need to find some level of balance in our lives. Mm-hmm. And we do not get that balance by only being able to point out what is messed up. I can hold as truth that someone is homophobic, transphobic, and a great comedian. They can both be true. I can hold as truth that someone is a very important activist and has a life story that is basically an allegory for so many things that are messed up in our society and is also homophobic. I can hold all those things as true. You know, we've been holding them as truth, you know, in non-woke culture forever, right? You know, here's a great singer, soul musician, who's also a pedophile, right? and they go to the concert. You know, that happens all the time.
But I'm the hater. Okay.
Okay. So that happens all the time, that people hold all those things as true, right? But I don't think that I think what happens is that there's a lack of balance and okay, but what is good? What is coming out that is good? Like a Rob again.
In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to?
So in February.
Really? You don't use it now because you know you don't always have. Okay. Mm. In February, what's going on?
So I will be showing up with a beret to the theaters and some bean pies for my Black Panther.
Are y'all even going to get it in? Are y'all even going to get it in Vienna? Are y'all going to have it in Vienna? I mean, like, or do you have to come to London?
Yes, we got, shut up.
Black Twitter did not care about Kim Jong-un and Cheeto. They cared about this mini escalation preventing them from seeing Black Panther. That is how ready Black people are for this film. So that's what you're excited about?
I'm super excited about that. Like I'm getting all of my forces in order so that that could happen on a wide scale so we could take over the theaters.
I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to wear. That's what I'm trying to do. That is the most important aspect of the film.
You know, I've been in the gym, so I'm wondering if I can rock a cat suit. Like, you know, just for no reason.
There are a lot of people who rock cat suits. I'm pretty sure you can.
Can I source one of them costumes? Because Lupita costume is really where it's at. I'm going to need that in my life on a regular basis.
All of my cat suits tend to be crotchless, so I can't really help you, but...
Oh, okay. That's information I didn't know. Okay.
So, I seem to buy cat suits from the wrong stores. Every time I get one, I'm like, oh, that's not what I thought I was buying. Oops.
Yeah, I'm afraid to be a Cassie. What are you looking forward to? Anticipating.
So this is still hibernation season. And a lot of things have come out that I need to catch up on. Black Mirror being one. Have you watched all of it yet?
No.
Oh, yeah. You're weird about these things. Black Mirror is dope.
It's very dope. But it really hurts me. It just, I have an existential crisis every episode. I can't, you know. Ain't nobody got therapy on a health insurance. Come on. Black Mirror, calm down.
Really? There are a lot of books coming out this year from Black women. Someone put out this great Medium blog post. They were like, 46 books by Black women that you should read this year. I was like, I won't read all of them because some of them, I've read other work of theirs and I'm not. But others.
I'm Black crime at this point. I just don't know what to do with you. Don't know what to
but
do with
others,
you.
I'm really looking forward to it. Like, I'm a real bookworm again. I have my library card. I go to the library like every week to pick up new books and turn in the ones I've read. So yeah. So actually I'm doing a challenge that somebody sent me to read like as many book, different types of books by Black folks. And I'm starting my challenge by reading the autobiography of Grace Jones.
Hello.
It's not a new book, but I'm excited. I finally got it from the library. And it's like, it's Grace. So I've been calling her Grace. I'm sorry. I should offer more respect. I just feel so close to her. Miss Jones. Miss Jones, can I call you Grace on my podcast? If you're listening, we'd love to have an interview with you.
Isn't she in London? Isn't she in London?
I doubt she would be in London during this time of year. But she has better places to be. But I can look into it.
Okay.
Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you can, drop us a dime at patreon.com/thequeertruth to help us keep going at this. Also, yep, you've done it. We have a YouTube channel now. Check it out, The Queer Truth. You might see our faces. Until next time, peace out.